Penguin Random House Audio presents The House on Britannia by Karen White. Read for you by Sophie Amos. To my family, without whom I would have finished this book much sooner, I love you. Chapter 1. The Crescent City, with its long and tangled history, its glorious architecture and subtropical allure, along with its inarguably dark past and requisite restless spirits, is a forgiving place. A city with accepting arms for society's lost and hungry souls, and a haven for people like me, who'd stumbled and fallen, yet managed to pull themselves back up. People who were brave enough to try again in a place known for its extremes, or simply too hard-headed to admit defeat. As the St. Charles streetcar I had just exited waddled its way down the tracks toward the river bend, I listened to its clanging and jangling. It had become the soundtrack of my life in a new city, much as the church bells chiming their holy chorus in my hometown of Charleston once were. Slowly walking down Broadway, I enjoyed the afternoon air of an early October Saturday. The oppressive humidity of summer had lifted, giving us a reprieve, and although the temperature was nowhere near what anybody up north would call cold, it was cool enough that I wore a sweater over my t-shirt. Even my fingers felt chilled as they gripped the straps of my backpack. I considered slipping on the gloves that my stepmother Melanie had sent me, along with typed instructions on how to care for them. I was due a visit from my family, my parents and my 12-year-old half-siblings, Sarah and JJ, the following week, and I didn't want to register Melanie's disappointment at seeing my dirty gloves. Exactly the reason why I wasn't wearing them, because absolutely nobody in real life had the patience to clean their gloves to Melanie's specifications, unless they were Melanie. I lived on Tulane University's so-called Fraternity Row, my upstairs townhouse apartment sandwiched between two fraternity houses, so I was prepared to dodge the street football being played as I made my way down the sidewalk. The days were shorter now, the rose-tinted dusk sky hovering over me as I walked, the growing dimness darkening the shadows between houses and behind unlit windows. Not for the first time, I was grateful that I had only 5 senses and couldn't see anything within the shadows. But just because I couldn't see anything didn't mean that nothing was there. I climbed the steps to my apartment, enjoying the drifting scents of something spicy and pumpkiny baking in the oven. Being greeted by fresh-baked goods was just one of the perks of having the southern version of Martha Stewart as my roommate, a version that sported flame-red hair and had a skill set that included all things domestic, as well as the ability to change a tire while wearing high heels, and had an accent as thick as the Delta mud from her home state of Mississippi. Jolene McKenna was a force of nature, whose turns of phrase could be simultaneously head-scratching and profound, and whose sweet nature hit a backbone of steel mixed with concrete. Jolene had been my roommate during my abbreviated tenure at Tulane, and when we'd run into each other in New Orleans 7 years later, I had needed a roommate, and she had needed an apartment. It had seemed serendipitous. As soon as I opened the French door at the top of the stairwell and threw off my backpack, I was attacked by a small gray and white furball with 2 dark button eyes and a matching nose and a wildly waving plumed tail. He was wearing yet another fall-themed dog sweater, courtesy of his favorite aunt, Jolene. Although Marty was technically my rescue dog, Jolene had taken over all his accessorizing, something my stepmother Melanie could appreciate. I had drawn the line at monogramming, but little by little I'd noticed MLT, Marty Lee Trenham, appearing on bowls, bedding, and his dog-sized bathrobe. At the tap-tap sound of approaching high heels, Marty and I looked up to see Jolene. As usual, her hair and makeup were perfect, and she wore a Wizard of Oz-themed apron over a cocktail dress. At her look of disappointment, something clicked in the back of my mind. Oh no. Did I forget? Yes. Tonight is the big welcome home party for Sonny Ryan. I've been texting you for the last hour, but you didn't respond. Her eyes widened as they settled on my unruly hair, which had had only a glancing swipe from a brush earlier that morning before I had left for work. I'm not sure if we have enough time to make you presentable, but I've never been called a quitter. She took Marty from my arms. Sorry, I was catching up on Beau's podcast and my battery died. Really, Jolene, there's no reason for me to get all gussied up. I used one of her words to placate her. It's just a small gathering of family and close friends. Jolene grabbed my wrist and began pulling me toward the bathroom. I've already drawn your bath. It's grown cool, but that means you won't lollygag. And of course you should get gussied up. Beau will be there. I blinked at her. My relationship with Beau Ryan was complicated, which was a lot like saying the levee system in New Orleans might have a few flaws. I hadn't the energy or the time to hash it all out now. Instead, I said, well, Beau is Sonny's brother, so it would be strange if he wasn't, and I'm sure his girlfriend will be there too. Besides, I haven't heard from Beau since Sonny showed up the night of Marty's gotcha party. He's obviously moved on now that he doesn't need my help finding his sister. Jolene stopped at the threshold of the bathroom and pulled off my baggy cardigan before gently pushing me inside. For someone so smart, you sure can be ignorant. Now hop in the tub and do the best you can with that shampoo. You have exactly 5 minutes, and I'm timing you, starting now. She tapped the screen of her smartwatch before closing the door in my face. 1 hour and 15 minutes later, we were in Jolene's relic of a car, named Bubba by its owner, and headed down Broadway on our way to the Ryan's historic family home on Britannia in the Garden District. Marty, wearing a celebratory yellow kerchief that matched his sweater, sat dutifully in his car seat in the back, the air from the vent blowing his fur from his face like in a shampoo commercial. The heater in the old car apparently had only 2 settings, off and full blast. I wanted to crack open my window to let in fresh air, but was scolded by Jolene, who warned me that the 3 layers of Aquanet she'd applied to my hair could go only so far. A silver platter filled with Jolene's pumpkin nut muffins sat on my lap. Apparently, she had the hearing of a bat, because despite the volume of the heater and the rumbling of the tires passing over the ubiquitously uneven paving of New Orleans streets, she heard me carefully lifting the plastic wrap to grab a pinch of one, and she slapped my hand. You're worse than Marty, she scolded. I'm starving. I've been cutting bathroom floor tiles all afternoon. Thibaut is teaching me, and he's very patient, but it takes forever. I didn't want to take a food break and disappoint him. Jolene swerved around a giant pothole in the middle of the road, causing me to grab the platter to keep it from sliding off my lap. You do know that Thibaut works for you, right? Yeah, that. I keep forgetting. Thibaut Cobalt was a master of all things construction-related and led the 2-man crew, including another jack-of-all-trades, Jorge, helping me restore my first home, a Creole cottage in the Marigny neighborhood. He was talented, smart, funny, and had the patience of Job. His only flaw was that he'd done time in jail for the manslaughter of his wife. I'd left out that little detail when telling my parents about Thibaut. There were some things they were probably better off not knowing. Regardless, I was lucky to have Thibaut on my crew, which was a very small one, owing to the not unfounded rumor that my house wasn't right. Meaning it was haunted, possessed, or cursed. Or maybe just possessed or cursed, since it shouldn't still be haunted. With the help of a reluctant Beau Ryan, who still hadn't reconciled himself to the idea that he could communicate with ghosts, we had eradicated 2 spirits bound to the house, those of Beau's grandfather and his grandmother's best friend, Jean, who'd been murdered in the house in 1964 by her own father. But in the weeks since, it had become clear even to me that things were still.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?